Good morning on this bright, pretty, sunshiny day. Good to see everyone out. We'll be in Genesis chapter 40 this morning. Before we start, we got a review class coming up here in a couple weeks as we wind this thing down. And I'd like to encourage you to do a little exercise if you have time to work on it between now and then. Get you a piece of paper, and kind of like we used to do when it's in school, said number it from 1 to 50. We're going to have a test here. Just number it from 1 to 50. And write it, Abraham offered Isaac. It could be something like a general topic of the chapter, like the flood or whatever. Just make you a list from 1 to 50 and a brief outline of what amounts to the book of Genesis. Be working on that. All right, chapter 40 this morning. Let's a little quick review. Joseph, 17 years old, and brought his father a bad report about his brothers and their tending of the flocks. Remember, Joseph is the favorite son, coat of many colors, and this caused a major jealousy problem with the other brothers. Had his dream, and they come back and said, when they heard the dream, said, "You think you're going to reign over us? We're going to bow down to you. You're going to have dominion over us." And it says they hated him. They hated him even more. Jealousy had turned to hate at this time. So he's sent to Shechem to check on his brothers. They saw him coming. They put him in a pit. They're going to get rid of him. Wind up then settling to these Ishmaelite traders that come through, took him to Egypt, went back and lied to their father about it. Is your son's coat? You know, like innocent, I can just hear it in my mind what it might sound like there. And said Jacob mourned many days for his son, would not be comforted. So we mentioned last time that the storyline seems to have turned to Joseph here a lot. But don't forget Jacob. Jacob's the key character back here. It's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Through Jacob comes the promises. And so even though we're using Joseph to fulfill the storyline, Jacob is still very much important to the story. So then Joseph is sold to Potiphar. And 17 years old. I don't know what all to imagine about Joseph, what's in his mind, how he's feeling at this point. You got to think he's scared to death, what might happen. Bound in some way. Maybe one thing that he might have an iron collar around his neck as they took him as a slave. So it's this young 17-year-old, I see Scott sitting on the back seat back there, about Connor's age, something like that. Okay, but close enough for comparison, yeah. So imagine something like that being taken off. Pleading with his brothers before they put him in the pit, pleaded, "Don't do this, don't do this." And then you got to get to Egypt, and I have no idea that he knew the Egyptian language. I don't know. But if not, he'd been there with a strange language to deal with. So Joseph is a tough situation. But the Lord was with him. That's the big key. The Lord has said that several times in the chapter. He was a handsome man. He was put in charge of all his father's house, perhaps because he's a handsome man. Potiphar's wife wants to lie with him. Joseph refuses her, apparently, on several occasions. He thinks he's a long way from home. Nobody's going to know about it. So why not? Well, Joseph knew why not. And fled from it. But she caught him by his garment and he ran outside. Then she told that it was all Joseph's fault. Joseph was the one doing the advancing. A big lie she told to the men there in the house and also to her husband when he came back. So again, he's put in prison, and again, it said the Lord was with him, put in charge of all the prison at some point then. And we kind of wound up with this slide here. Faithfulness think about the faith and faithfulness. The big story here of this last class was the faithfulness of Joseph, even in his difficult circumstances. So that brings us to chapter 40. Chapter 40, it's a lot to read this morning, so I'm not going to read a lot of it. But the chief butler and the chief baker had offended their master Pharaoh, and he had put both of them in prison. They were put under Joseph's charge in prison. They both had a dream on the same night. Very similar dreams in lots of ways. They want someone then to interpret. Joseph goes in the next morning to see them. He sees their distraught face. They're concerned. They're worried about something. Joseph recognizes that. And so they want the interpretations. And Joseph says, interpretations belong to the Lord. Joseph also had dreams. Remember that? Let's tie back into this a little bit here. So the butler's dream was he saw a vine with three branches, and it budded, and it blossomed, and it turned into grapes. And he reached up and squeezed the grapes, and he put the wine into Pharaoh's cup. Three days, you'll be restored to your place. The three vines, the three branches of the vine are 3 days. In 3 days, you'll be restored to your place, and you will again put the cup in Pharaoh's hand just as you used to. But remember me when you get back there. He says, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. I've done nothing here. They should put me in this dungeon. Please remember me to Pharaoh. Help me get out of here. This translation says dungeon. Some say in this pit. So we can't think about it being a pleasant place where Joseph was confined here. So remember me when you get back. Help me get out of here, he asked the butler. So the bakers heard the interpretation of that dream, said, okay. He said, my dream was kind of like that too. He said, mine, I had three baskets full of baked goods on my head for Pharaoh, all kind of baked goods in the basket for Pharaoh. In the top basket, the birds were eating the baked goods that were in the basket. Joseph said, the three baskets are 3 days. And in 3 days, you're going to be lifted up and put on a tree and hanged. Your head come off and the birds will come and eat your flesh. Quite different dream from what the butler had. So 3 days later, it is Pharaoh's birthday. And just as Joseph had said, both of the dreams came true. The butler was lifted up and put back in his position of serving Pharaoh, and the baker is hanged. But the chief butler did not remember Joseph to Pharaoh. He did not. So that's the end of that first chapter break. Going right into the next chapter, 2 years pass between the two chapters. 2 years. That's an easy short line for us to read. Oh, 2 years has passed. But if you're Joseph living those 2 years, you can imagine what that might be like. Hoping every day that something would happen that the butler might remember him. But it didn't happen, not for 2 years. 2 years later, after this dreams of the butler and the baker, Pharaoh has dreams. Pharaoh dreams that there were seven fat cows, good-looking cows. They came up out of the Nile, and they were grazing there in the marsh grasses. And there were seven thin, ugly cows that came up also. And the seven thin, ugly cows ate the fat cows, but they were still thin and ugly, even after they did. And there was a stalk of grain that had seven big, full, nice heads on it. And then seven more ugly heads, scorched by the east wind, came up on the same stalk. And again, the poor ones devoured the good ones, but they were no better off. So that was the dreams, two dreams Pharaoh had. So he calls for all the Egyptian wise men and magicians. Everybody come in and said, I need the interpretation of my dreams. Nobody can interpret the dreams for him. And it's then all of a sudden that the chief butler remembers Joseph. Oh. So he says, Pharaoh, back when you were angry with your servants, me and the chief baker, you put us in prison. And there was a young Hebrew there. We both had dreams one night. He could interpret our dreams for us. So he tells Pharaoh about this and how that exactly, as Joseph had said, the two dreams came true. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph. If you can interpret these other two dreams, you can interpret mine. And then the text says that Joseph shaves and changes his clothes before he comes before Pharaoh. So, raise a little sideline question for a minute. Why did Joseph shave before he came before Pharaoh? Well, you say, well, he's been in the dungeon. Obviously, he's probably pretty shoddy looking or something like that. Let me share something with you. I don't know if it's true or not. It came from the Biblical Archaeology Society article they had on exploring Genesis. So Pharaoh sent and summoned Joseph. They rushed him from the dungeon, and he shaved and changed clothes and came to Pharaoh. That's chapter 41, verse 14. Why did he shave? And what did he shave? And why does the text bother to mention it? The author of this says, I propose that this is a bit of tangential information is provided by the biblical author who was familiar with the customs of the Egyptian court and the Egyptian. He said, people in most ancient Mesopotamia did not shave. Most people in ancient Mesopotamia did not shave. He said, in contrast to the majority of people in the ancient Near East, ancient Egyptians were clean shaven. At least in the time of the Old Kingdom, 2600 to 2100 BC. The custom was for the men to shave beards and mustache and then wear a false goatee on special occasions. Foreigners can be distinguished from native Egyptians in many Egyptian tomb paintings by the presence of their full beards. So the Egyptians are clean shaven. Most foreigners would have beards. By shaving his beard, Joseph immediately transformed himself from a foreigner to an Egyptian. The change foreshadows Joseph's acceptance of the court, as well as the fact that later Joseph's brothers failed to recognize him, thinking he was an Egyptian because he was clean shaven. He said, and the author says, more than this, I believe not only that Joseph shaved his beard and mustache, but he shaved his entire body. In other words, I suggest Joseph was depicted or taken on the shaved body of the priesthood. I don't know where he gets that for sure. But the point I get to here is that just think about when the brothers come later on and they don't recognize Joseph. At least this author thinks that's why he took on the appearance of an Egyptian by being totally clean shaven, where most other people, other men would have, still have beards. So that's why I'm bringing that up. So when Joseph is asked to interpret the dreams, he said, Pharaoh says, I understand you could interpret dreams, talks to him about it, and says, no, God will give Pharaoh an answer. So Pharaoh tells him his dreams, and he said, nobody could answer them for me from that standpoint. So Joseph says, God's going to show you the interpretation. God's going to show you what he's about to do. The dreams are certain. The two dreams that you had, Pharaoh, are the same. And the fact that you had them twice is the certainty of it. God's about to make it happen. There'll be 7 years of plenty. 7 years of plenty is represented by the seven fat cows and the seven full heads of grain. 7 years of plenty are coming. However, it will be followed by 7 years of famine. Severe famine. The land will be depleted totally. That's represented by the seven lean cows and the seven bad heads of grain. But when they had eaten the other cows, they were still lean, because that's how depleted the land's going to be after these 7 years. So what to do about it? Joseph tells a plan. He says, choose a wise man, set him over the land, and each year collect a fifth of the produce, because there's going to be plenty. There'll be 7 years of plenty. So collect a fifth, 20% of what's produced every year, and store it up, and store it as a reserve, and have it when the years of famine come. You got to think about it. This young man, relatively so, who was a prisoner, they got him out of the prison, brought him before Pharaoh, and now he's giving instructions to Pharaoh. This is what you ought to do because this famine's coming. But the advice pleased Pharaoh, and it pleased his wise men around him. So he says, we're going to choose Joseph. And then we'll talk about providence. Let's read from chapter 41, verse 37. Let's talk about the advice that Joseph gave. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning as you. You should be over my house and my people, rule according to your own word, only regard to the throne, while be greater than you. Why did he pick Joseph? So, well, he told him his dreams. Yeah, I think he saw more of that to it. He said, the Spirit of God is in you. Now, did he recognize the God, who God was? I don't know all that. But because of what he saw in Joseph, he chose him as this wise man to handle this grain situation. So, providence. How is Joseph here at this point in time to take this role? Think what he's been through since he was 17 years old. He's now 30. Since he was 17 years old, he was taken, sold by his brothers, Potiphar's house, eventually ruler of the house, his wife lies about him, goes back to prison, and over the prison, he thinks something may happen. 2 years it passes, and finally he gets the call to come to Pharaoh's house. And now look at the position he's put into. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. We'll talk about providence in a minute. So Pharaoh says, you can be ruler over all my house, second only to the throne. He puts gold chains and garments on him, dresses him like he should be dressed for that position, and said whenever he goes out, everyone will bow the knee to him. He puts him in Air Force Two, his number two chariot, and that's how he drives around. And they shout out, bow the knee. This is Joseph coming. Bow to him. And he gives him a wife, Aseneth, who's the wife of the priest. And Joseph is 30 years old when all this is happening. It goes up so much food, they can't count it. The food from around, the grain that's grown around each city is gathered up, and the grain for that city is stored in that city. And they do this all throughout the land of Egypt. And it says they, you know, you think you might start off inventorying the grain. got to the point where they couldn't inventory it. There was so much of it, they couldn't count it. And then Joseph also, now we're in the 7 years of plenty we're talking about here. Joseph has two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. We generally say Ephraim and Manasseh because of the blessings later on. But Manasseh was the oldest one. And Joseph said in chapter 41, verse 51, Joseph called the name of the first Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil in my father's house. We've had this firstborn son. He says, God has blessed me now that I can forget the troubles I've had in the past. I can forget the toil I had. I can forget my brothers are doing to me, what's happened to me in the past. I can forget that now because I'm blessed with this son. Then verse 52, the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So it seems very much to me like Joseph in the first one is looking back saying, I can now forget my past. And the second one is saying, I can look to my present and my future because where I am now. Think the names of the sons. I can forget my past. And I can look now in the land of my affliction where I've been blessed with the names, meaning the names of Ephraim and Manasseh. Verse 53, then the 7 years of plenty, which were in the land of Egypt, ended. And the 7 years of famine are beginning. So the land is famished. They have no grain. Crops don't grow. You can imagine what it'd be like for farmers here. Or even more so, think about the big corn belts and whatever of the Midwest. There was no crops, none, for 7 years. There's already talk now worldwide about food shortages, grain shortages, because Ukraine and Russia are such large producers of corn and wheat. And the wars that's going on there is going to cut back production. So it's a worldwide effect here. So they had no grain. But Joseph's got grain. He got grain stored up. So he starts selling grain. Well, it's come to buy grain from all over. It's not just an Egypt famine. It's an all-over famine. So others are coming in to buy grain. Famine is severe in all the lands. Jacob, back in Cana. Jacob hears that there's grain for sale down in Egypt. And he tells his brothers, why are you sitting staring at one another? Go buy grain. We don't have any. We can't grow any. There's a famine. There's grain in Egypt. Go buy some. So 10 of the brothers go to buy grain. And Benjamin stays at home with Jacob. And you can kind of see why. He was the only remaining son of his favorite wife, Rachel. Joseph is gone. So he holds home to Benjamin, his baby son. So the brothers come to Egypt and a strange thing happens. What do? They have to appear before the governor, Joseph, in order to buy grain. They come in. And they bow their faces to the ground. They probably don't think a thing about it. Joseph recognizes them. That's why I'm talking about Joseph being clean-shaven and looked like an Egyptian earlier. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, you can see why they would not recognize him for help. They bow their faces to the ground. He's almost immediately see what pops in Joseph. But Joseph is now 37 plus, how much plus? He was 30 when Pharaoh, he came into Pharaoh's presence, started being the governor. 7 years of famine, plenty have passed, and we're into the 7 years of famine, but we're less than 2 years into it. That'll come up when we get into chapter 42 next time. But he sends them back for grain the second time. or they're less than 2 years into it. So there's somewhere, Joseph, somewhere between 37 and 39 at this point. The brothers come to buy grain. They did not recognize Joseph, but he knew them. He accused them of being spies. Because of the shaved head and face. Accused them of being spies. He talked pretty rough to them. You're spies. You can't look to the weakness of the land. You come to look at our unprotected cities. He tells them this more than once. You're spies here. No. We're 12 brothers. We came from Canaan. They explain that one stayed at home, the younger one, and one is, the text uses the word no more. One is no more. Little they know, they're talking to that one that's no more. So Joseph tests them. Okay. You say you got a younger brother? Now what's in the back of his mind? Okay. He knows who the younger brother is. He wants to see him. It's his full-fledged brother, Benjamin is. So how's he going to get him there to see him? Well, he's going, like he's testing. Okay, I'll test you. Your younger brother's got to come here. Prove you're not spies. So he puts him in prison for 3 days. He pulls him out and says, one of you's got to stay here. The rest of you go back and take food back home. At first you think, well why? Why did he send one of them back and keep all of them there? No, he wants the food to get back home. So he keeps one, sends them back, so that make sure that the food gets back to the people that need it back in Canaan. So one of them remained here as prisoner. The others go back, you get that youngest brother, and you bring it back. And then Reuben reminds them of their past. Chapter 42, verse 22. Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is required of us. They know they're in trouble. And Reuben goes all the way back to when they sold Joseph, put him in the pit and sold him, and said, you know, what we did is coming back to roost. There in chapter 42, verse 22, 21 through 24, actually. The other thing they don't know is, because they don't know who Joseph is, that Joseph's understanding what they're saying. Now, he's speaking to them through an interpreter. But he knows what they're talking about. And they're talking about him and what they did to him. And how it's bothering their conscience. That's why they're in this problem. So he bound Simeon, sold them the grain, put the money back in their sacks, and sent them home. Holding Simeon there. All the way back, one of them opens his sack to feed his donkey. And he finds his money in the sack. Whoa. What's going on? So they get back and they open the sacks, and all the money is back in all the sacks. Now if we go back, is he going to accuse us of not just being spies, but now being thieves? They start telling Jacob what's happened. Reliving the story to him. Jacob's bereaved, remember? Joseph is no more. And now Simeon is no more. He's in an Egyptian prison. And he said, no, you can't take Benjamin back. If something happens to him, my body will go down to Sheol. I can't take it to lose another one. That's what he's saying. Well, let me stop a minute before we talk about some applications here. Somebody got thoughts? Something I covered or something I missed or something I messed up on or whatever? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, look how Joseph's life's divided. He's 17, up to 17 years old. What is he? He's a favorite son, right? Wearing the coat of many colors. For the next 13 years, what is he? Sold, prisoner, lied about, all kind of things going on here. And then for the next rest of his life, I guess, he's number two in command in Egypt. Favorite son, bad part. That's a good part over here. Yep.
When the butler had a good, he forgot that he just had lied.
Yep. Okay, let's talk about a few possible lessons here. About giving credit to God. Three times Joseph said something about the interpretations belong to God. Do not interpretations belong to God? It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh the answer. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. You know, how easy would it have been? Just take the credit for this yourself. Done that before, Pharaoh. Well, let me tell you about your dreams, Pharaoh. Here's what's going to happen, you know. Joseph didn't do that. He didn't do that. A lot of good things happened to us. We need to give God the credit for what he does for us. Steve's radio program this morning was about blessings. God blesses us. We need to be thankful and give him the credit for what he does for us. Paul in Acts 17, God who made the world and all that's in it. He's Lord of heaven and earth. He's not dwelt in temples made by his hands. Nor does he serve with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives life and breath and all things to all. He gives us everything. You don't get your next breath without God. Give him credit. Be thankful to him. God's in control too. He's controlling this whole thing that's going on with Joseph. Joseph said, this thing is established by God, and God was sure to bring it to pass. Talking about the famine. God placed Joseph in Egypt for a purpose. He made him ready for the exact time. So that way we get the word providence I brought up earlier. Pro is before we get our word video from the rest of it, is to see. So you put them together, you get foresight or foreknowledge, to see ahead of time, to know ahead of time what's going to happen. God sees the end from the beginning. Divine providence is the governance of God by which he, with wisdom and love, cares for and directs all things in the universe. The doctrine of divine providence asserts that God is in complete control of all things. God's directing things. Does that mean everything's going to happen for us will be good? No. But God's in control. God sees beforehand. Isaiah 46. Remember former things from forever, for I am God. There's no other God, even none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from the past things which were not done, saying, my purpose shall stand. I will do all my pleasure. God knows the end before it ever starts. He knows what's going to happen. Another idea. Guilt's going to catch up with you. What they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother. When they saw what was happening to him in Egypt, they were accused of being spies trying to get this grain. It all came back to them. This is all happening to us because of what we did to Joseph. That guilt was sitting there with them. They've been riding them for all these years. Numbers 32. If you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sins will find you out. One more, like I'm about finished. Remember Achan? He took the spoils from Jericho. And when God starts looking for the guilty one, he has him cast lots, and it's first the tribe, and then the big family, and then the family, and finally it's down to Achan. How would you like to be an Achan standing there knowing eventually that finger's going to get to you? My eyes are on all their ways. They are not hidden from me, nor is their sin concealed from my sight. Let me skip a couple here. Next week, Wednesday night, 43 through 46. We've got four chapters, 43, 44, 45, 46 for next time. 43 through 46. All right, thank you this morning.